Hello, my loves, and welcome to the podcast. Today's guests are two stars of the fishing world. We've got Barry Lynch, who's one of my very good friends. He is a super passionate angler. He owns a fishing equipment supply company called The Lure Box, which actually has its own pro team, which you can check out. Barry grew up fishing in Zimbabwe. He has his own fishing team at The Lure Box, and we love to catch up on occasion in the park and get pissed together. Matt Boast is also joining us today. He is Rapala Pro Staff, Lowrance Pro Ambassador. He is a passionate lure angler in the UK and across Europe. Matt is a consultant to Shimano, Pro Staff for Lowrance and Rapala and VMC Hooks. So this is the fishing episode. I hope you enjoy it.
Thanks for picking us all up and sorting all the shit out like normal. Just fucking generally
bolting
it all right up.
Yes.
Right.
So
dependable, if nothing else.
What I also did, guys.
Well, if you actually listen to the instructions I gave you, he texted me at 7:30 this morning to ask me where to park. I told him exactly where to park, and then he parks at the end of the road and said, like, where do I park?
No worries.
Victoria Parking.
So I'm like doing an hour on this meter and then legging it out and fucking right. Refreshing
and
it is what
I'll
I said.
Perfect.
Yeah, we're ready, bud.
What you doing? You've been fucking around.
Man, it's already. Who'd have thought a year ago we're all putting on masks and we got kids' masks and. Ridiculous, isn't it? Oh, thank you, man. Oh, I got a freebie here today. Yeah. At least
you pay on the way out.
I'm going to need one of these hats as well.
I went to all that effort, trim my beard and like shape it all in, and now I've got a mask.
I haven't shaved this morning. Not often I shave in the morning.
Is that why you forgot to pick them up?
Yeah. No, I did call him and say I can pick you up, and he said, no, don't worry, I'll ride.
Where are you actually from, Matt?
I'm half Aussie, half UK. So my old man's an Aussie.
Okay.
And my mum's English.
So, yeah, that's like me. I'm half Yank, half Mank. So
my mum's English. You're educated in Scotland. And Ireland,
that's it, yeah. And I lived in Germany for 3 years. And Bazzy, he's just a South African.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I'm just African.
He's actually a Zimbabwean.
You know, I organised this big international kayak competition.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Well, I never organised it. Ian Harris organised it, and I helped him. Well, I was meant to sponsor it. I ended up being his man Friday, but he said, he asked everyone, because it was an international thing, there were like 11 different countries, he said, can you all bring a flag? And he said to me, can you bring your African flag? I'm not sure what the African flag is.
Yeah, the tribe,
but yeah, it's just Africa, this big country.
Can you bring one of your shields?
And I bought my bow that I used to have through my nose. It didn't fit anymore. That hole's closed up now. But he was like, can you bring an African flag? I was like, what the African flag?
That must be so weird.
And he's
for
an
you.
Intelligent bloke. Well,
but imagine fishing in Zimbabwe versus coming here on the Basingstoke Canal. I mean, that must be a world of difference, right? I mean, same with Australia, right?
Well, I've never been out there, though.
Oh, you've never been to Australia?
I've never been back. A lot of my family, obviously, they're mad on their fishing out there. But I think the fishing's a lot harder.
Did your family get sent over there? Is that what happened?
Yeah,
back
no,
in
originally,
the day,
I think originally they got, England, yeah, they got deported because the family name was originally Trevascath, which is a Cornish name. And as far as I've traced it back, one of them got deported for stealing a loaf of bread.
I was actually joking about that. But
No.
What, they got deported from Cornwall?
From Cornwall into Australia, obviously, when all of that was going on.
On one of the criminal ships.
Convict ship or whatever. And then made their thing. Wow. The old, so Grandad had like, I think he's got about 3,500 acres down the bottom, sort of
3,500 acres.
So,
well, it's probably all desert. I mean, in Australia,
no, I think
probably
had a big
civilization.
Had a fair sized cattle herd. I think they had about 900 head of dairy on the cattle herd.
Wow, and that's small for a 3,000 acre farm, I guess.
Yeah.
But you could have 3,000 cattle there easily.
Yeah, there's only half an acre of lawn actually.
the rest is desert.
Import water from.
But they used to, I think they used to like swim the cattle. From what my dad said, they used to have to swim the cattle over to Phillip Island. That's what they call Fairy Penguin Island.
Okay.
Down there, they used to swim the cattle over, but they used to go over there and shoot the kangaroos and all of that. So it was quite
sounds like
full
fun.
On.
Is it your family still on that farm?
I think it was all split up and sold after my granddad died, so I've never been back. But I've got 27 cousins and 7 aunties out there. He had 7 sisters. And then one of my mum's sisters also emigrated out there, so I've actually got 8 aunties out there. But yeah,
you've got a tiny twinge of the Australian accent.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. It's only people that are not the English people don't tend to pick up on it as much as the sort of people that have been abroad a lot more.
Yeah, because Barry lost a lot of his Zim accent, but he's still bring it out when you've had a couple of drinks, right?
Yeah. Well, it's still there. I mean, obviously, I don't sound English, but when I hear my Zimbabwean friends, it's a lot stronger. And I go, wow, is that how we used to talk? Why are you putting on that funny accent?
Do you find that if you sort of socialise with them or you go out there for like a couple of weeks, it brings it back?
You know, you start, I don't know, you subconsciously start pulling out the phrases and stuff, which is not just the accent, it's also the phrases. Like, you know, we say, how's it? Like, you say, you're right, and we say, I don't really say that anymore because no one knows what I'm talking about. But even like, you know, my wife's South African, a lot of my mates are South African or Zimbabwean.
Yeah.
So you kind of never lose it completely. But yeah, you know, you do. It comes out and it's more the terminology that you use because you're in that vibe and everyone's, how's it, brew? And oh, you end up getting caught up in it. But to answer your question, it's quite ironic that you say, like, the Basingstoke Canal as compared to fishing in Australia and Zimbabwe, which sounds all exotic and can be, but there's very little, there's not as much water. As you know, in Australia, you have to really be by the coast, and there's a few rivers worth fishing, but, I mean, in Zim, I used to fish on holiday, that was it, and until I got older, and then I could start driving around, and then, but you don't just, I mean, you know, Ben, I walk to the river 2 minutes and catch a 15-pound pike.
Amazing,
you can't do that in many places in Zimbabwe.
But also in Australia, and I think,
even in Australia, it's
everybody's not... Everybody's such... They're so more focused on their fishing and they're just actually better at it. So the problem is you go out to Australia and you get a day's fishing and you might not catch just because the fish are so pressured or, you know, they've been hammered so much. And we moan about it over here going, oh, everybody's on the fish here. But you do catch over here.
Yeah, and
but
yeah,
if you go over there...
Yeah, it's also like catch and release, whereas a lot of places like that, they're catching for the table, aren't they? So you think you go to those places and you're going to... I mean, at the sea, it's obviously different, right? But freshwater in particular, a lot of those places, they're eating all the fish. So whilst you don't have as many people per, you know, square meter of water, you know, you go to these places and you think you're going to clean up, but there's, particularly like in Zimbabwe, there's ruthless sort of illegal netting of fish. You know, there's not good management to the fisheries, so people do whatever they want. You know, you can go and catch 100 fish, take them home, and so there may be... And
they've got completely different sort of ethics. Like when I fish with the Aussie boys in the kayak competitions and bits and pieces, you know, like your little vibes that you fish with, they'll do loads and loads of that, but they'll be fishing with those and they've just got a completely different, so you fish for the brim out there and they'll have their live well on the back of the kayak and they've got to catch so many and then it's a live weigh-in, and the amount of times that you've got, so they're fishing with fluoro, so straight away over here everybody's like, oh, you shouldn't be doing that, you should fish your treble hooks, you could get bitten off by a pike.
Do they have
whatever.
Fish in there that would bite you off?
I'm not sure, but getting back to the sort of main focal point is the amount of times that they've had a brim deep hooked with one of those vibes, so that's like 2 trebles on the vibe and it's right down the throat, so just snap the thing off, chuck it in the live well, and they say that as they're fishing they can hear the fish banging about in the live well, and by the time they come to weigh the fish it's got the whole thing out, the whole of the bait with 2 treble hooks, and it's in the bottom of the live well. And over here, somebody just leaves a treble hook or gets bitten off. Mate, it was on social media, they're getting absolutely caned. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's actually not a problem necessarily if you know, but it's all these internet warriors and keyboard warriors that are like, oh, I read that it's bad because of this. It's like, well, if you actually go out there and you do this enough, and then you know what you're talking about.
But that
about.
May be a specific species and the way it's hooked and stuff. Like, I still don't go around condoning leaving treble hooks in the back of
pipes. No, I'm not. But it's just those guys, like,
you never know.
Going back to saying how pressured it is.
They're out
there every evening, every morning, every weekend, all weekend fishing. And the level that they take it to is a lot different. Whereas over here, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm lucky if I can get out during the week to go fishing. I'm lucky if I can get a weekend to go fishing.
It's a different lifestyle.
I get blocks of fishing where I'll go abroad and I'll go.
Yeah, you do. You tend to do much more bigger events and bigger holidays. Whereas I try and get my fill just like Ben said, pop into the Basie Canal for an hour in here and there. I don't, but I mean, the last
Which
couple of years I've fished less than I ever have.
Yep. Well, yeah, because you're running a business as well, let's face it. Over here, everyone's running a business. You're commuting to London or whatever it is you do. And but the cool thing that you did, Barry, I think, was when you said you went to Florida. And he's like, tell us a bit about that. Like, you didn't go specifically to fish. Like, the kids were at Disney World, and you're there in the parking lot.
Ostensibly, I wasn't going fishing, but I said I might take a few rods. Michelle, when she saw me packing up, you know it, well, you probably the same, right?
Yeah, you have to sneak it.
It's like five rods, and I was just packing in my rod.
I'm not fishing, it's just in case I need it.
These flambé bunk boxes, they're really good. They're quite deep, so you can actually put all your gear in there as well.
Yeah.
If you take out the foam, so you can put in rod. They're made to hold the reels, but... So and she was like, I thought it's not really a fishing holiday. Well, it's not a fishing holiday, but if you go all the way to Florida, right, it's the bass mecca of the world, you know, Florida largemouth bass. I mean, that's where they come from. So I'm not going all the way to Florida and not fishing, I'm sorry. Yes, Disney World is a priority, family. But we were lucky because, you know, Wet and Wild, it used to be the water park there. They've now knocked it down and rebuilt a new one. But we were our hotel was on the lake that Wet and Wild is on the opposite side of. I don't know if you've ever been there.
No, I've never been.
So when you're up on the super tubes at Wet and Wild, there's a big lake.
Right.
And we were, our hotel backed onto that lake on the opposite side.
Yeah.
So in the morning, I'd wake up at like 5:30, go down and fish for a couple of hours. You know, the family's, you know, on holiday, you're not getting up before like 8:30, right? So,
yeah.
And I caught like 7-pound bass right 100 meters from my hotel room. I'd literally walk down. You weren't meant to fish there, but...
No one else was obviously fishing.
5:30 in the morning, no one's going to... There's big, Michelle's got a sign on me, there's beware of alligators and snakes, and I'm standing knee deep in the water. She's
Yeah, because I think at one of the Disney World places, they ate like an alligator or something.
Yeah, so you
do have to be careful.
Yeah, that was only about a year before we went, and it was disappointing because they stopped fishing at all the Disney lakes. You could fish at all those lakes before. But when that child got eaten, they banned fishing at all the, and there's some amazing lakes. You can imagine, like Disney, you know, it's all water. But yeah, I mean, the nice from Florida, there's water everywhere, and the Americans don't fish them because no self-respecting American fisherman is going to go to Walmart and fish the little pond in the car park. You know, that's like embarrassing, right?
Barry showed me a photo. There's like a car park, and he's like going to the
I mean, there's water everywhere.
The doc who I fish with, he said that they used to go out there for golfing holidays and that, but he used to get like a little six shooter rod and he used to have it in his golf bag because he said every one of those ponds on the golf course, they've got bluegill, gas, bass, everything.
That's Florida as well, was it?
Yeah.
And there's water, you know, it was built on swamp, wasn't it? So they've basically built it up. So whenever these depressions, there's water. Yeah.
Well, there's going to be more of it. It's all flooding as well. So all the smart people are selling their properties by the coast.
Really?
And all the dumb people are there.
That's why it's so cheap in Florida. Move here. Yeah. But yeah, it was great. So my wife would go shopping and I'd say, right, take your time. Normally I'm, you know, itching to get out of there. I'd say, take your time. I'd go fish in the pond and there's alligators in every pond as well and loads of bass. So Amazing. Why not? It was great.
So did you get your tackle taken by alligators at all?
No. I had a few close...
Some big snakes as well.
Close encounters. You're walking early in the morning and the one in the reeds. But I mean, where I was fishing, it, you know... Don't get me wrong, I grew up in Zimbabwe, right? Crocodiles are my absolute number one phobia. We had a guy in our school taken by an 18-foot crocodile, and I'll never forget that. I wasn't there, but in front of his parents and everything, it's horrendous. No. So it's not like I'm going around blatantly just going, oh, I don't care. I'm very, very aware.
But as anglers, we actually do put ourselves in situations like that. Anything to get. Just that,
I mean,
there's
a bit
of a risk here. But
there's a bit of a risk, but it's a calculated... I'm in... The water is really shallow, so... Yeah. I can see, and it's crystal clear. I can see for 10 meters in front of me. You know, it was, I mean, it's really shallow. So if and I'm looking constantly. I'm not just, you know, people who get taken are people who are maybe a bit blasé, like the guy who said, what, alligators? Fuck those alligators. He jumped in and got eaten by an alligator.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that. It was quite ironic. But I'm like, it's my absolute number one fear is being killed by a crocodile or an alligator.
Well, so also, it's like, I guess the alligators in Florida are a lot smaller. I'm not 100% sure, but I think
they're not as aggressive as crocs.
And in Australia, the salties.
The salties and the Nile crocodile are pretty well linked.
It's a totally different league.
I wouldn't be standing knee deep. And they're also, a lot quicker.
The speed that you can move out of water as opposed to the speed that they can move within water.
Yeah. True.
I mean, they're quick on land.
They're very, very quick, but they're quick in a short burst.
Right.
You know, they're not going to come from 100 metres or 20 metres even. They're going to sneak up, They're going to sneak up because it's shallow too. You see it coming.
Yeah, you see it coming.
I mean, it's a foot deep. Any alligator that's big enough to take me, I'd see coming from 30 meters away. Yeah.
But the other thing in Florida that you have to be careful of, especially if you're in the marshes, there's a huge python infestation. They've got a huge issue with alien species of python, where people have had pets, let them go, huge retics. They're taking over the whole of the Everglades. They're eating all the bird fowl, all the
rodents. At least they won't kill you in one bite. Rodents. I'd have to be quite a big one to take you down.
Well, absolutely. They have competitions and they catch like 100 a day, but it makes no impact.
Do they eat them?
They don't. They euthanize them.
Really?
Yeah, it's just because it's just killing all the wild fowl, all the...
Mm. It's a shame, like invasive species, there's a in Florida even, they've got tilapia, which is, you know, in Zimbabwe, it's eastern Thailand, I think they originate. But
what is it, sorry, tilapia?
We call it a bream, but it's a tilapia, a kind of fish but they're really good eating. They farm them for eating. And we used to catch them. That's what our first fish I ever caught was
bream. Yeah, you see them fishing for them in all the drains out there.
And there, they're everywhere, and they're actually invasive. But they're lovely fish to catch and eat, but they're not meant to be there. And they're just taking over. And the same as, the alligators are native, but I mean, they are just out of control as well. Well, everywhere you go, you just see alligators, and that can't be good. Well, they obviously know the numbers, but my goodness.
That's so in Australia?
In Florida.
Oh, Florida, right.
Florida, and they've also got the snakeheads, you know, those.
But
those
they're very
things
on it over there, like from the point of view of like tackle sales and like hunting sales and all of that. That all, like 10% of whatever, like of a rod purchase or a reel purchase, 10% of that goes back into the fish and game budget. And like the selling of all the like the rod licenses, that goes back in, and they've got like they're very good on how they control, like from a hunting point of view, animals being taken. Or I don't know. I think I was watching something with Donald Trump Jr. and he was saying how much they put back into the Great Lakes, like how much they put, but it's not very well sort of advertised. But they're really on it over there.
No, that's
they do put a lot of money back into
the recreation.
It is good,
and there's a lot. I mean, 10% of their fishing gear is probably more than we spend in a year. And the 100% of our.
Everybody wants to crack that US market, don't they? When they're a small brand and they're coming on and they've done bits in the UK or that.
Yeah.
America is the one that they just want to crack.
I mean,
crack.
There's so many people fishing there and they're not shy to spend money. I mean, you go into Bass Pro Shops, the guys walk in, 700 quid, they're buying reels, rods, they go through gear. Like, when I see, you know, people say in this country, oh, it's expensive, or oh, I've got a budget, and I go, oh, that's fine, but, you know, we can't all be the same, but my goodness, they spend some money on fishing gear there. And you also go through it a lot. You know, those bass, I mean, geez, they destroy your lures.
Do they?
Yeah, I took a pack of Kytex the one year I went to my brother's. I just had one pack of Kytex, I think six or eight in a pack. First day they were gone.
Yeah, literally. It's like you see the guys putting pictures up like, where they've got bass thumb, where
they've been thumbing
them. So they've got very coarse mouths, obviously.
Yeah, they're not like pike, though. Like pike obviously cut them up. They sort of thrash them about. You know,
sandpaper almost, isn't it?
Yeah,
really?
they like grab them, they pull them off your hook and they break it in half, but they're amazing. They just destroy lures. It's great. I mean, I'd love to have a fishing shop over there because I was off to Bass Pro Shops the next day to go and get more Kytex, the swing impacts, because they just destroyed every single one I had. I was trying to glue them together and they just, didn't work.
Yeah, that's that age-old thing of having one lure that's working really, really well and then you haven't got it.
Well, that's what happened when I went to Florida. I took four of the Western Shadtees, the 9cm, because when I grew up, you didn't have, in Zimbabwe, it was during apartheid in South Africa, right? So it was boycotted, so you could get very little. So you got whatever you could get. Lucky I had some family in America and they occasionally sent me stuff. But there was very limited stuff. You know, you either had a Rapala floating crankbait or a plastic worm and you Texas rigged it. And there was very little variety. So I look at lures now, when I grew up, you know, and I go, well, that's not really a bass lure. But they're all bass lures, you know. They'll catch bass and fish. But in my head, I go, oh, you know, worms, that's what I grew up catching bass on. So I took these shadtees thinking, let's see if they like them. My goodness, they absolutely loved them. And I made the mistake of giving two to guy at Bass Pro Shops because he showed me one of his spots. Well, he was a great guy, we still keep in touch, and he had never seen Western before. Talk of cracking the Western market, they had never heard of them there. Now they're obviously, well, they're getting really big there.
Is it Scandinavian?
And they moved into America last year or the year before, and they won actually the iCast Hard Lure of the Year, I think.
Okay.
So the iCast is the big trade show, like here we have FTEX, which is the one in Europe. iCast, obviously, there, it's in Florida. It's just down the road from where we were, actually. It's huge. and Western, it's quite a thing because the Americans love their own brands. Mm. You know, they love the American brands. Yeah, they're very patriotic, aren't they?
Same for cars, same for everything.
Buy American. Ford, you got to buy American.
Especially with Trump, you know.
Especially now, it's become even more so, right? Which is great.
Yeah.
But so they don't really like Japanese, they don't like Chinese, and so for a Scandinavian company to win the best hard lure at that show was quite something. I think that really put them on the map. But yeah, those I had those two lures left and they got destroyed. I almost wanted to go back to my mate Mo and say, Mo, you know those lures I gave you? Can I have them and I'll send you some more because I'm only here for a good time, not a long time.
You know what you should do? Maybe do, Barry. I know nothing about it. But if you could get them to make it out in China, one of these Alibaba
Well, they're all made in China anyway.
Brand it yourself.
Yeah. No, they're all made in China anyway. But they branded, you know, that it's obviously a Scandinavian company, but they're not manufactured in Denmark. Right. They're manufactured in China, but you don't want to be copying, you know. I think this is the thing people have said to me. It's not, I've realized it's not about, it is about the lure, but it's also about the brand. Mm. You know, you could go and copy a pair of Nike shoes and say, I'm selling these. They're not Nikes.
People
want Nikes.
It's that cult following, isn't it?
Yeah. There's certain things where you can get away.
Stuff as well.
And they,
I tell you what, I got Jordan.
Years and
I got
millions.
Jordans on Alibaba. They look like normal Nikes.
Yeah, well, you
the guys
would,
at work
you
were like, those shoes are so naff. You got these old shoes, they're falling apart. I was like, they're perfectly fine. They're Stan Smiths. They're like 15 years old. What's wrong with them? And so I went online. I said, oh, these Jordans are 450 quid. And then I saw this other website. It was a bit with some Chinese lettering. And it was like, Air Jordans, 50 quid. I ordered them. They look exactly the same, honestly. I don't wear them anymore because
but
I'm
people
like,
people who know,
just
know, right? I probably wouldn't know. I'd be happy with them, you know, some imitation. I mean, in Zimbabwe,
I'll get
that's
you some.
probably what I grew up on, you know. You couldn't get anything like that. So, yeah, but they spend millions of dollars and years researching these things. It's not as simple as just making, you know, guys do it. And I've seen guys selling, you know, pig shads. Remember, there was a guy selling Strike Pro pig shads at seconds. They weren't Strike Pro pig shads. They were a copy. And I don't mind if you want to make some lures in your garage and use them and sell a few to your mates, that's fine. But to copy someone's name, they've invested millions
course,
in patents.
Yeah.
And that's really, you know, that's where I draw the line. I mean,
yeah, you do
I've
see
made
all
my
of these
molds
now. There's loads of molds coming out, isn't there?
I mean, we had a guy buying lures from us and then copying them. And I almost didn't want to send him the lures because I could see what he was doing. He was buying one of these, one of those. And then he was making molds. But, you know, he's buying from us. And I wanted to contact him and say, mate, you know, what are you doing? So I drew the line when he used the discount code and it was like, you're being banned. I can't remember his name, but I won't name and shame him. But, yeah,
but that's the thing, there's so much technology in phishing now, isn't there?
Well,
I mean, would you say it's almost too much, or is that, do you like that aspect of it?
I think as a fisherman or as a retailer, I think it's different, right?
Yeah, as a retailer you love,
as a fisherman you know that maybe there's a lot more complicated than it needs to be sometimes. You know, just a fish, some fish are more clever than others, but some lures are definitely stand out, you know, as better quality, better thought out. But there's a lot of lures that are much of a muchness and they just haven't been branded as well. Or
There's still no substitute for just pure watercraft. Just know it, just being out there and knowing what you need to look at and why you need to look for it.
Yeah.
Like just reading a river or reading a lake or looking at contours and understanding why the fish are in that set place and when they're in that set place. I think
and
those,
what fish are you going to be in that set place and
yeah,
like you
I think
say why they're there, because
that's huge. When you take the little bit of knowledge that we glean from say the Basingstoke Canal or a river system in the UK and we understand that, and then you try to apply that to a river say in Holland where you can't see from one side to the other, you just don't know where to start. And you just literally you have to break it down into really, really small bits. And like, right, there's current coming in from here. This is this. And look on your fish finder or just look at the surface of the water and see how it's different to another area. And then you can gauge from those small things that you've gleaned from being a kid, growing up fishing and working it out, which is what you should do rather than just nicking other people's spots.
Yeah, and I think
time.
That's the problem these days is that with social media and with technology, everyone can be a fisherman and they just need to ask the right questions in the right places. And you can read, you know, YouTube, you can watch YouTube videos and you can get there. You know, you can pick up a lot before you even picked up a rod, you know, and you can get, you know, Google Maps, you can look at the stuff, you can find out what you're meant to be looking for. It's always different when you actually get there and do it, but you can get it halfway there. But I think that, as you say, Matt, there's no substitute for that experience on the ground too. And that's why I'm quite pleased that I grew up when I did and where I did, because there was no help from anyone. You had to figure it out.
Yeah.
And although, as you say, I grew up in Zimbabwe fishing little lakes and big lakes, Lake Kariba, that's, you know, 300 kilometers long, I think, something like that, was the biggest man-made lake in the world. But you're not fishing out in the middle of nowhere. You're generally going into little bays, or if you're fishing for tiger fish, you're going out in the deeper water, but you're not fishing right out at 100 meters of water. Mm-hmm. You know, so although it's a massive lake, it's like fishing a small lake because you're fishing close to the bank and structure. Yeah, you break, it's like you said, depending on what you're doing. So it's not that different to like fishing in Florida or in Holland. So if you've got that basic knowledge that you've grown up with, you kind of have an instinct that you can sense, not sense, but you know what you're looking for, whether it be fresh water. Well, salt water is different because it's tidal and different species, but there's so much importance in having that basic knowledge. I get so annoyed, people phone me and say, oh, I see you fishing, where are you fishing, what are you fishing with, how do I fish it, you know? Yeah, mate, yeah. Go find it, fish it how you want. It changes on the day, it changes on the spot. One lock in the Basingstoke Canal, I fish drop shot. One lock in the Basingstoke Canal, I'll fish a crank because I know there's pike there, there's perch there. Don't just expect me to give you a couple of answers and that's going to solve your problems, because
it might
solve a problem on one day. And yeah, and I said,
you've got to learn about it.
Half the battle is learning yourself, and that's half the success, half the reward too.
That's the fun, right?
Yeah. I mean, finding the spot. Yeah, I spent
real fisherman. I want to do it.
I spent years, like you in Holland. You spent years working on that water.
I thought that I'd got it sussed, so I bought Willem's boat off of him early on, and I was like, there was an option to buy the finders off of him, and I thought, oh, it's going to have waypoints on it, mate, I'm just basically going to go from here to here, like, and I'm just going to rob all of these spots, and I know, but, and you go onto the spot and you'd be like, oh right, so he's got a spot here.
Doesn't look like much.
Nothing's happening.
You probably programmed all the spots and changed them. That spot, he thinks.
Oh, so you can actually program the thing.
Yeah, so you have like a GPS.
Yeah, it's got a GPS, you save your waypoint.
Right. You save a waypoint, and that'll be because of... But I didn't understand whether that could have been an early summer spot or a late winter spot, or it could have been a spot for Xander, or it could have been a spot for perch, or it could have been a spot. So I was turning up and I was like looking at it.
Did get all his waypoints.
So I got all of his waypoints, but then I was like, I don't know what I'm looking for. I don't know how I'm going to fish it. I don't know at what time of day. So I literally, in the end, after a couple of years, I just like, I'm just getting too confused with all these waypoints.
It must have been
deleted everything off of it. Took it all off.
Didn't you take a backup just in case?
No. I was literally just like, wiped the whole lot. And then just went back to the basics and went to the areas where I had fished with him at the time of years I'd fished with him, and then worked it back out for myself. And over time, some of the other Shimano guys out there sort of guided me and helped me a little bit. And when they were like, right, we fish here because when you look at what the tide's doing, because those rivers are all tidal, you look at what the tide's doing, you look at the angle of the buoy, you see how the water's running, then you know that you've got a lump or a hole on the bottom. If the water's running that way, you know that the fish are going to be sitting in that hole because the water is pushing the food towards them, and they'll be there. But if that current's not running, they'll be sitting on the other side of the hole facing the other way. And it's all of that that you need to take into account.
You can, it's like you can take a horse to the water, you can't make it drink. And
you have to learn that.
When I went fishing with Luke Coppens, for example, that was the same place in Holland. It's called Haringvliet. It's massive, and we were fishing for perch. And normally, like here, if I've got my finder, I'm normally looking for shoals.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to the bigger waters.
Yeah.
And if I'm fishing the Thames or somewhere, then I'm looking at structure, and it's too shallow, really. You know, fish finder works with a cone like this. So the deeper it is, the more area it covers. Mm-hmm. But when you're in 6 foot of water, you know, you're looking in an area like this directly below your kayak.
Yeah.
It's not really giving you much info. So it's more you finding the depth and the general terrain that you're looking for, where you think fish would be, as opposed to trying to find shoals of fish. You can see them on the side scan sometimes, but there's so much going on in the Thames, debris and flow, that I just basically look for it for depth, and I know what depth they're going to be at, or if I catch them in that depth, then I'm looking to emulate the same depth. And I was with Luke, and we stopped at a spot, and there was nothing, like if I was there on my own, there was nothing that stood out that would have made me say, right, this is going to be a good spot for perch.
Yeah.
And we were casting, and well, he was catching lots of perch on that day. And I said to him, Luke, what is it that brings you here? You know, because there's nothing on that. It's flat bottom. Yep. I don't see any fish. We were catching fish we weren't seeing because they're big fish.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not shoals. They're not.
Yeah, they tend to be solitary. Individuals, big perch over there tend to be like in twos or threes, or even just singles.
And you don't even see them because you're not casting. You're not catching them below the boat.
You're casting.
And I said to him, "What?" And he just said, "Well, I just know this fish here."
Yeah.
You know. So he didn't really need his finder because he knows that like you maybe your specific spots you could drive there without a finder, I guess. You have it on just as reassurance
and you know. It sets up. You've got a mental image of how it sets up underneath the water because you go over it and you'll look at the contours and you think, okay, if I'm facing here, and you're still going back to the old school thing, you'll still use landmarks. So, that windmill or that group of trees on the bank, what I'll do is I'll line myself up between this and this. You still have to do that from a mental point of view to know exactly where you are.
Yeah, so like you just press a button and your boat goes, you can, I mean, with motor guides and stuff.
Yeah. That's amazing. So you obviously got your boat from someone that was with a wizard fisherman.
Yeah.
He's
a guide. He's a full-time guide. Right. He's been with Shimano for God knows how many years. Like, he got a sort of long service award type thing.
Was that Willem?
Yeah.
Willem Stock.
He's just like been out there. He's guided and he's just basically, the predator fishing thing sort of came over here quite sort of late. We started to get the Zander and that sort of triggered it, didn't it, would you say? Sort of the predator fishing in the UK sort of exploded when Rutland and Grafham opened up for Zander fishing. That's when
the guys were fishing them for years and years, on the fly, on a big scale.
And bits and pieces, I think more. Mm. But when that predator fishing opened up, everybody suddenly had somewhere where you could all go and you could rent a boat and you could get out there and you could actually fish for them and target them, and they just took off. They exploded from the point of view of loads of numbers and people being able to catch them. And at that point, a lot of people who were really serious about it, they liked it, but they were like, well, we want to, usual thing, I want to catch a bigger fish. So they're like, where else? And they looked into Europe, and the people, the key names back then were Bertus Rosemeyer, Willem Stolk, and a couple of others. But they were like the people you could phone up and be like, I want to go and catch big Zander, I want to go and catch big Bert. And you could go out and they would guide you. They were like the, and now in Holland, everybody's a guide, aren't they? It's just mad.
It's a big place.
Yeah.
But there's, I think, more the problem is guides. People here seem to think that you go over there and you're just going to be put on
clean up
massive fish and you're going to go and catch 20 double figure Zander in a day. And I mean, I went with Luke Coppins, who's one of the best out there. He's been fishing that place 20 odd years. And
so it's quite, sorry, it's quite stocked, is it?
It's not stocked, it's a natural fish.
Yeah, it's not naturally stocked, but it's, you know, when you say stocked, you mean it's got a good head of fish.
Well, I was wondering why people expect to catch
No, because you see all these pictures of guys with these massives that, you know, they're
so
fishing.
So many people fishing.
They're probably fishing daily.
They flood social media.
And they're fishing it daily.
Yeah.
And they've been fishing it for 20 years, so they. And but even them, you know, they'll go out and blank. Mm. You blank.
So it's like anything on social media. When they've had that perfect
day,
it's
blown out of proportion. What they do is they save up their pictures. Sometimes you'll catch five double figures out in a day, which is a good day, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, out there, anywhere, that's a good day. But
they'll also hold their fish back, because I know some of them.
Yeah. They'll turn them around and hold them in a different angle as well.
But also they'll hold the photos back, is what I'm saying. So they'll you'll go out on a set day and you'll have a really good day, and they'll be. And you'll have seen another guide go past you in a boat, or somebody clock where you're fishing. And I've had it with guys, they're like, don't put those photos up today, because if you do, saw where we were most of the day, and that is going to wreck that spot. So keep those photos and leave it for a couple of days until the weather's the same and all of that. So people out there, they're literally
the scent,
people will I've been out there fishing, and the media guys will, like, they don't know as much about fishing. They know a bit, but they're not pros. And they'll be like, they'll show one of the guys and go, oh, look at this fish, he took the, he just caught this, it's massive. And they'll just go, leaves on the trees, that was months ago. They literally, they don't look at the fish, they look at the surrounding. They're looking at the background straight away. That's what they're doing.
And
they're analysing it to check the spot and see what it lines up with. And then they'll go onto Google and they'll look at the background and they'll go, oh, there was a big long white shed in the background. And they'll break it down, and you go there next time and you'll just, your spot's getting raped.
See, I tell people not to tag me in photos, like, just so no one knows that I'm fishing during the week. I say, can you,
so your wife doesn't know where you are.
Can you wait till Saturday and then tag them? Don't tag me. Don't put that.
Not in the pub. Don't take a picture of me in the pub.
I'm telling everyone how busy I am. No, don't wait. And then Sunday comes along. Oh, look at the fish I had.
Yeah.
But hang on, it was raining all weekend.
Mother's all day.
Not working.
That's what I think Barry said to me. We were going out and we were fishing. I was like, oh, you're going to come? He goes, oh, I'll have to see if Michelle will be all right with it. So, and he's like, I was like, oh yeah, she was all right with it. He's going, no, I've decided that it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. That was his key phrase. So it's like,
I hope she doesn't listen to this, but one time I went out on the way back.
Especially when you go like that, he's put his middle finger
up. I'm getting nervous now. You can see who's in charge in my family.
I'm not too sorry to push the table that much, because
see who wears the pants.
Yeah.
But I remember when I used to do a lot of building work in London, I used to sometimes finish early, and I always had a rod in my van. So instead of going home, because then I had quite a young son, and then obviously you're not going to go out. Not necessarily because I wanted to go out without them knowing, but I'd think, let me just stop on the way home at the river. And I remember one time it was like a Wednesday, and I caught this really nice pike that I was so excited about. In the Wey River here, it was 98 centimetres, which,
wow,
as far as pike goes, not massive, but from the river on a little light gear. It was really fun.
98 centimetres seems
pretty damn big. Yeah, I mean, they grab to like a metre 40,
metre pike is a good pike.
It's a good pike, but you know, from the river in particular, it's you know, like you can catch those all day long in the bigger, not all day long, but...
Yeah,
you know,
they say that a river fish is more hard for.
Yeah, and it's natural, and it's, you know, they don't grow as big because, you know, they're fighting harder against the current, but... I caught this fish in it. I got gill rakers.
Yeah, rake,
you know,
rash.
When you hold them the gills, the rakers.
Yeah.
And I got all this blood on my hand. Oh. And I couldn't... I wanted to tell my wife and my kid and put it on Facebook. Yeah. And I went home and I was eating dinner. She said, oh, what happened to your hand? And I was like, oh, no, just building... I grabbed something.
Barry.
And then I took it only on the weekend. I could say, hey, guys, check this phone. Check this bike I caught. Funny. I don't do that anymore, obviously. I'd tell her everything.
After you've done it.
Yeah, exactly.
From my experience.
Well, you know. Nah, Michelle's brilliant. We love Michelle. As long as I know.
I think I'm pretty fortunate from that point of view. My missus just... I'll be like, oh, I'm going to Holland for 2 weeks. She'll just be like, yeah, whatever, I'm pleased. Literally, I think...
She's like, thank fuck for that.
No, pretty much.
See, the doctor's mind loves me. She likes me to be around. Maybe yours is happy to get rid of me.
I get back and I'm like, oh, did you miss me? And she's like, no. I'm like, oh, okay.
Where have you been gone?
That's nice. It's like, it was pretty good. I think, I'll do a week at work. I work really hard. And I think I'll shoot back over to Holland next week. And she'll be like, yeah, cool.
But you don't have young kids, do you?
No.
See, that's the difference.
Exactly.
When you've got a young kid, it's a bit unfair. Well, ours is 12 now, but still, you've got to entertain him and you've got to share that.
Yeah, no, I get that. I cheated, so I got a ready-made. So I was like, when I met my wife, she had a 7-year-old, so I just took her on pretty much straight away. And by the time I got into my competition fishing and fishing abroad, it didn't really matter.
She fishes with you now, doesn't she?
Well, you've been out with Sam on the boat, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. So you take her with you. That's what I
want. But it's like, now it's like, when are we going fishing? When are we going fishing? When are we going fishing?
She's like 22 now.
No, Sam's coming up. I think she was 27 this year.
Okay.
So, but she's mad on it. And like, she'll... Brilliant. Always come over and she'll be like, oh, get a drop shot rod, I'm going up the pond, because we've got a pond in the wood just past our house.
Really?
She's like, oh, I'm going to get the drop shot rod. Takes that. When she goes on holiday with her boyfriend, she'll be like, set us up a couple of rods, want a couple of drop shot rods. She takes him on. Always up there, like, did, like, from being at school, she was always tying flies and doing bits and pieces, and yeah, just loved. And it was always, we'd go trout fishing initially before we were into the predators, and go out, get a limit of trout, take them back home. She'd whack them on the head, no problem. Amazing. With it. Yeah. Take them back. We're getting, I'd crack a beer, go on the sofa and start watching telly. She'd be in the kitchen gutting them, and she'd just bring them in and be like, is this right? Is that right? And I don't eat fish.
Yeah.
I don't eat fish at all.
She'll make a good wife. She'll make a good wife. You make all the men jealous now. They're going to want her number.
Yeah, you guys were in the good books everywhere until you got to... When we got home, I sat down in front of the telly with a beer, and she was in the kitchen whipping up the fish.
Yeah, no.
That was what she wanted to do, and she wanted to do it. It's cool. So
no, I'm joking.
It's good.
Awesome.
No, it's good.
Then you threatened to buy a rod.
I want to buy one.
You're here now, you know.
Maybe. Yeah, absolutely. I want to buy from the Lure Box.
There's hundreds of rods. Hundreds of rods. I'll take you out, you and James, and even Isla.
Well,
Because Isla's probably not interested in fishing. Not that she's a girl, but she's at that age.
Yeah, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and so I remember, I think it was Kingsborough Community College that got, we went and we had this lesson in fishing. So we went to the pier and it was a Hudson River and it was all, but it was like, you right up at the top of this pier, so it was really high up, and it was so exciting. We absolutely loved it, but it was just, we didn't catch very much, and what we did catch was quite small, but it was still amazing. We
were, and like, it had three eyes, and
yeah, exactly. It had like six. It had like human arms.
It's cool though. Oh my God. When you take kids, and they do go fishing. I, a lad was around our house doing the building, and he had his two kids, and I said, "Oh, I'll take them up the pond fishing." Literally, just little drop shots. They get so excited. Yeah. Small perch that we call wasps, literally. Going out and that sort of rattling on the rod, and that they are hooked, and they're literally, they go home and all they're like is, "Dad, when can we go back to Matt's?
Yeah.
Dad, when can we go back to Matt's? Dad, when can we go?" And he's like, it's driving me mad, but it's like so healthy.
Yes, to get absolutely. Out there. Especially now with all the devices. Like, we didn't have all the devices back then. Now the kids have all the devices. It's such a nice way for, as you were saying with your daughter, to go out and do that. So yeah, I definitely want to get. I want you to hook me up with it, because we went to the New Inn. Of course, we were at the pub. And Barry's got this, like, it was so different from however many, whatever it was, 35 years ago when I was doing it. He's like whipping it this way, and it's
bait casting. Yeah.
Jeez,
that's the thing.
Off that way, under the bridge.
That more in South Africa. Over here, the UK boys,
and Zimbabwe.
It's like cult following of like bait casting.
Yeah, bait casters. It's like people discovered them about 5 years ago.
Yeah,
well, like, bait casters. We were like, BFS.
We had the bridge over the canal or the and Barry's gone right through under the bridge to the other side.
Skipped it. Yeah, it's,
me and my son James were like, we need this.
Well, the thing is, I mean, it's not actually rocket science, bro. You know, bait. Yeah. People talk, because people are grown up in this country with spinning reels, so it's what you're used to. So suddenly you're getting something new. And it seems everyone's told you it's complicated, but I mean, I got my first Shimano when I was 14, my bait caster. I had spinning reels, and I practiced in the garden, you know, as a kid, because I didn't have, as I said, I couldn't just walk to the river like I can here. It's safer to practice in the garden. Mm-hmm. A few practices, and I remember the first time I went out on the boat with my actual bait caster. I took, back in the day, you would have one rod. If you were, you know, two rods if you're lucky. I had my spinning rod and my bait caster rod. Then I had my tiger rod, which was my heavy rod. So those were my three rods: bream, bass, tiger, basically. And I took my spinning rod just in case I had a problem.
So you'd have two rods if you were lucky, but you had three.
No, not on the boat. No. I had a tiger rod, but you wouldn't take it where I was because there were no tiger fish. That was when I went to Lake Kariba or the Zambezi. Right, okay. But for those small lakes, you'd have just basically one rod because you were bass fishing. If you went to Kariba, you'd have your bream and your tiger. That's it.
You must have had some cool adventures at Kariba, like around the dam and around there.
That first time with the bait caster, I went, my first cast, I was like, right, here we go. 14 years old. And I went back, and as I went back, the lure hooked the seat.
Oh, I've done that.
It's fine on a spinning rod. I mean, it's embarrassing, but you'll know, right? And I went to give it this big heave. And the chair went off. Well, you know, a bait caster, the way it works, I've got some of them. The spool carries on spinning and the lure is meant to take the line out with the weight of it and pull the line, whereas you get a big backlash. And that was it.
And it takes you hours to
unpick. Well, there was no way I just looked at it and went, right, that's going down.
That's like my normal fishing experience, what you just described.
Well, yeah. But I mean, it's not that hard. You know, you start off slowly. You've got, especially nowadays, the braking systems are so advanced. You know, you can tighten it up, and you can, one trick is take the line out to the distance you want to cast, then put some tape around the spool and cast, so that if you do get an overwind, it doesn't go beyond that tape, so that it doesn't, because it can really get bad. So it's just practice, and I mean, it's not.
I still don't really fish with them. I really don't. I'll fish with them for vertical, and I'll maybe use a little bit of it on my crank rod for casting cranks, but...
So this is bait casting.
You're fishing quite in big open waters mainly, aren't you? If I'm fishing from the boat,
sort of pitch. Yeah, and flip, times, like you're saying under that bridge. Yeah. That's where it is.
That's what they made for. You know, you get some guys, you can fish, you know, there's a reason you have all these different lines and reels, and because they're made for specific purposes. And there's no point having a bait caster and being in the open. Because they don't cast as far as spinning reels, do they? I mean, you can with the right setup, but they're not as easy to cast.
Jeremy Starverman said to me that he fishes with one pretty much all the time. And he said that his reasons behind it were he felt that he got 15, 20 minutes of fishing a day more.
You get much more.
because of like the retrieve ratio and like that sort of constant.
Well, for someone who's listening who doesn't know what it is, like me, because I've seen you use it, what, in a nutshell, what's a bait caster?
Well, basically, a spinning reel is your traditional reel that hangs normally under your hand, right? So, I mean, I don't know if you, I could get one out for the sake of the video, but a spinning reel, the line comes off in a different way. It's a lot easier. You've got a bail arm that you flick over, and then when you cast it, the line comes off sort of the spool sideways. It's just a lot easier to use, but it's also actually easier to cast really light gear on. You know, bait cast, as I say, it's upside down. You, the spool goes perpendicular to the way of the direction of the rod. You hold it with your thumb, you press a button. As you cast, that spool starts spinning. And the idea is that it basically almost pushes the line off the reel. So you need that momentum of the lure to keep that line, keep pulling the line out. You get me? So if you if you cast, for instance, and you cast into the wall, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to bang that thing out at 100 miles an hour.
That's the kind of thing I probably do.
You're going to get that spool spinning at it goes at a serious speed. I mean, when you see guys when the line's wet, they go bang, and you see this big foam of like water as it comes off,
Which isn't easy to catch. I've been trying to videotape it, but
you see some classic photos of guys when they did. You get a little spinning reel too,
don't you?
More on a bait caster, because it's that centrifugal force goes. If that lure stops and that line stops going out, that spool carries on spinning.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
when you
it just makes
you know,
the most horrendous mess. Yeah. So all of those loops of line have just gone round, but they're folded and folded and folded tangled, again, and you pull it and you don't know where it starts.
And with mono and fluorocarbon, it actually starts from the inside and pushes out, so it opens up like this, and braid actually stops on itself quicker. It's thinner, so it's harder to pick apart, but braid actually doesn't get as bad as fluoro, actually. So it's a different way of fishing. It's, for me, I don't have a single spinning reel for pike. I've got about 20 bait casters from light. I don't use BFS really. If I'm going in the canal super light, I just find it easier with a spinning reel. I think guys, this BFS is bait finesse. It's a bit of a sort of fad word, but it is. I mean, I can see its application, and it's great if you're into it. Really, really light bait casters where you're casting like 1 to 2 grams. The Chinese and the Japanese are really good at it. A lot of guys here are doing it, and I think a lot of people do it just to say that they can cast a 1 gram lure on a bait caster. It's kind of a bit of an achievement award. You know, whereas I'm like, you know, I'd use a bait caster all day long over a spinning reel.
I think it is. It's like you say, it's sort of close quarter battles. So like when you watch the Japanese guys, they'll have quite a short rod and they'll almost sort of build the momentum, won't they? They'll sort of like, I can't think what you'd do it with, but if you're like swinging like a conker on a string, you might sort of get the momentum before you release it. And that's what they do. They sort of build that momentum and then they'll fire it off, but it'll go skiffing under trees, like you said, with Barry under the bridge. And that, I think, for close quarter stuff, I'm sure it's really good.
No, it is, but it's a lot easier with heavier things. You can imagine like a pendulum, right? A heavy lure, you could just swing once and go and swing it like that. Whereas a light lure doesn't have that weight, so you really have to generate, you have to load the rod and generate that tension in the rod in order for the rod to do its job and flick it. Obviously, you have much lighter rods, so it's relative. You balance your rod to your gear. But it is, I still find I prefer spinning. I can cast a BFS. I'm not great with it, but it's just because it's not something I really.
I think that's where we're going back to the kids. Having a rod that's like maybe a solid tip or is a lighter rod, they're only going to necessarily catch small fish because there's a lot more small fish than there are big fish. But if you can give them a light rod that the fish is actually like really pulling on and the rod's bending, it adds to that excitement. I think that's quite an important thing for
first-timers to
get a light rod. Crazy light.
You definitely need light. That's the thing. I think most people, when you come from like a background of like carp fishing or something where you've got really big fish and you see them out with these massive rods catching little perch, A, it's not fun, and B, it's not easy to cast light lures on a heavy rod with heavy line, because you know you need that, as I say, it's bad, they balanced, you know. So heavy rod, you need a heavy lure to load it and get it out there. And I mean, I was the same when I came from Zimbabwe. I had little short 6 foot bait casters that would cast up to like 40 grams, and that's all I really had. I didn't even have a spinning rod. I'd got rid of my bream rod, I think, and I was trying to fish the canal, the Basingstoke Canal, with this 40 gram bait caster, and I realized actually I can't cast even a 7 gram lure if I can get it out there, but it's not easy, you know, because I've got this heavy rod with this heavy line and it's very stiff and it's just like a broomstick. And when you do catch a fish on it, it's not much fun either, because you know, it's like 30 pound braid, that you, you know, and you're catching a little
just
perch.
Just sort of rawhide it in.
Yeah, yeah, skimming it across the water like skiing.
Right.
And guys go, oh, you know, it's the same. I see carp fishermen when they switch to pike in the winter and they say, oh, nothing big. I caught it, only caught a 10 pounder, you know. And you go, well, that's a nice pike. You know, if you catch that on a 3 to 10 gram
on the
rod,
right setup.
With you know, 12 pound braid on a little 3-inch plastic lure, it's great fun. But these guys are catching them on 2 pound test curve. You know, carp is measured in different weights, isn't it? But the equivalent of probably 150 gram casting rod that's made to catch 30 to 40 pound.
That's
carp.
Not the only reason that we do it. It's also from the presentation point of view.
So
when you get lighter and you get more sort of in tune with it, if you've got like a really stiff rod like Barry's saying, you've got 40 pound braid, you've got like a 20 pound leader, and you've got like a 40 gram jig head or whatever, because you're not really that au fait with how it all works, so you're going to imitate that fish. So if you just take any one of these plastic baits, so basically what you're doing is you've got a jig head through it, and what you're doing is you cast that out and that falls to the bottom, and as it's falling to the bottom, that tail that's on the end of it is obviously swinging left and right, creating a load of vibration through the other, and it hits the bottom like that. So now you've got to replicate what you just did, so you can't just reel it in and then cast it out again, because it's not going to be any good. So what you do is you give 3 or 4 turns on the reel handle, which pulls that bait up in the water, and then you stop, and then it falls back through the water. But you want that constant motion so the predator chases that. Yeah. So the only way that you're going to do that is you need to know when that has hit the bottom.
Gotcha, yeah, yeah.
So if you've got a very heavy jig head, so like a big piece of weight on the end of this, you're going to feel it because it's going to go...
Right. That's
when
it hits
the bottom.
Through the line, yeah.
Yeah, that's all of that...
But your line will go slack because it's falling, your line's tight.
That's not necessarily the greatest presentation. You want that to be as natural as possible, so that fish going down and then just coming up and then just going down and just coming up, that constant,
so it looks more natural,
so it looks more wounded or something like that. But
and also slower, so the fish can get to it rather than that, falling like
the key thing is that fall speed. You want that because the fish aren't necessarily going to hit it here when it's on the bottom.
Yeah.
But they will hit it when it's just off the bottom. They're not necessarily going to hit it when it's right up here.
Right, so it's
there's
that balance,
sort of strike zone close to the bottom, certainly with Xander. And you
can
want
I drink
that.
Your coffee?
Can I drink it? I said you guys can have it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't
drink coffee.
Okay.
So that you need that to be in that zone there. So you want it in that zone as long as you possibly can, which is where we come back to the lighter tackle, because a lighter line won't be affected by flow, won't be affected by wind, and also it's less... you know, to notice going onto the lure, so a finer fluorocarbon or a finer trace or whatever you want.
It also cuts through the water easier, so it doesn't hold up the
so
lure.
So you can go for a lighter jig head that will just slow that fall speed and give a more natural presentation.
The thicker your line, especially if you're fishing deeper in current, and if you want it to get to the bottom, you need more weight, so it's all relative. So if you're fishing with, you know, 2 mil diameter line, you're going to need more weight than if you're fishing with 1 mil, because it's half...
Right,
so it cuts through the water much quicker. So you always want to balance that so you can fish not always as light as you can get away with, but sometimes it's essential.
Well, that's my... I do some fly fishing occasionally when I'm in Ireland, more just for fun, just to chill and just...
Yeah.
I don't catch much.
That's why most of us do it, to be honest.
The point is, I don't catch much. I went with a gilly once and he had a lot of poutine, which was fun. So we had this like moonshine with down
like
and
potato.
Loads of that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's basically moonshine.
Well, that always helps. But a bit of alcohol, you know.
But that was an awesome day out. So, and we also caught, it was a stocked lake, but we caught 3 or 4 brown trout, which was absolutely amazing. But
that's great fun, you know, to catch brown trout on the fly is, you know, and fly fishing is not easy, you know, it's quite a achievement really for someone who doesn't fish and is high on moon or drunk on moonshine.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. What was this chat, it goes back to what you guys were saying about the watercraft, and this bloke, he was actually... half Australian, I think he was half Irish, and anyway, he knew everything about the lake. It was Loose Garnet where we're fishing, where it's one of the places in the national park, and it was just, he knew exactly where to cast, he knew exactly the technique, of course, so you know,
an unfair advantage, like we were saying, you know, if someone can show you that, then it's half the battle, and it also gives you that confidence, because you're not out there on your own going, I don't even know if there's fish in here, you know, like, if you went there and you didn't know, you wouldn't even know what species necessarily that you're fishing for, right? But if someone says, right, there's brown trout, this is what you need to do to catch the fish in this water, and this is where you need to be, Then, you know, if he can, you're halfway there, it's just getting that. But with fly fishing, obviously, you still need to get that fly out there and it's presented.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Like the line that I had, it's a thick brown plastic, because I got the, I obviously got the cheap one.
Yeah.
And, well, no, and then the fly on the end, I kept tying it. I wasn't tying it correctly, of course. So it was, again, what goes to, you're saying, get the ratio correct about the weight of the bait against the line. And so that might be another thing I might have
fly
to do.
Fly fishing in particular
taper
is
it down to the tippet lens.
Particular.
But were you fishing... Were they sinking flies, so they call them wet flies, or was the fly...
It was a dry one.
It was a dry... That's super cool. Yeah. So when you see that fish coming up, and it takes...
Well, even when we got a little bite, which is usually what happens when I'm by myself, I don't catch much, but even if you get a bite, that's like, that's super exciting, I got a bite.
Well, that's the thing, like, I don't know how much you do, I haven't done nearly enough, but when you go, like, on the chalk streams in this country, it's sort of the most... sort of quintessential English thing that you can do, like brown trout fishing
upstream on, dry fly
and I mean it's amazing, and just to actually get a bite is an achievement, because those fish, they're not easy, and if you're in, you know, you're wading and you've got trees above you, it's not like you're in the middle of a lake where you can just cast anywhere. You really have to pinpoint where that fish is. You know, trout in the rivers, they tend to sit in the same spot. They don't move around like this.
That'll be exactly what I was saying about in Holland. So you'll get that area that's out of the current, where they haven't got to expend all of that energy to, you know, because they're not going to sit in the current working like crazy.
No.
When then they're going to get a little fly, which is going to give them like a couple of calories or whatever, and then they've got to spend 30 calories sitting there waiting for that same. So they'll always sit behind a rock or in a little depression or in behind some weed, where it's not as hard work.
Yeah.
Same for all fish.
And they just sit there and wait. And even if a fly, so you'll see it, when you cast your fly a foot right of them, they see it, but they go, no, that's it's too far. I don't know if that's what they actually say.
I think it's too much energy.
But they literally, and if you don't spook them, because you know you got that long leader, right? If you don't spook them, that fly, it's not like a lure. You know, I've been lure fishing. You bring a lure past them 10 times. If they're not going to eat it, they're not going to eat it. They've seen it. Whereas with a fly, it's so natural that you can bring it over them 100 times, as long as you don't line them or land your main line on their head.
But that's ideal.
And then you get it just right, in just the right position, and they come up, boom.
Yeah.
And so it's, and often you miss them because you panic and you strike too soon. You know, but that's, it's, you get so much more of a sense of achievement just by you know, instigating that bite.
The old boy that taught me to fly fish, he was always like, when they came up on the dry fly and they took it, he used to be like, you got to say God saves the queen and then strike.
Really?
That was what I was told. That was,
I don't know whether in the Republic of Ireland that would go down too well.
Say hello Mr. Fish. That's what I was told. Say hello Mr. Fish. But it depends in different fisheries.
Yeah.
Some guys say it's here is 1 second because the fish have been caught more. They're more...
Yeah, they'll turn and spit it
different
back
time
out.
Of year,
you
maybe,
get that with lure fishing though, don't you? Get a dunk, you're like,
yeah. Sometimes they hold on to it longer. So sometimes it's 2 seconds. Sometimes it's one. With bass, you can let them swim off with the lure for 30 seconds.
Before.
And just let them take it, and they're great because they...
That's where you see the bass boys, isn't it? On the programs, they're like, they're getting rid, almost like they're going to hit a ball.
Well, that's
and then they wallop it, and you're like, oh my.
That's what I love about bait casters. So that's a bait caster, right? You're asking about bait casters. So that's the way it sits with your rod underneath. And so when you get a bite, often I'll actually click it, okay, so the spool is now free,
right?
So that the fish can now take line. Because obviously, if you're holding it, you've got this tug of war.
You don't have the chance to strike.
No, you do have the chance, but the fish is going to be pulling it, and it'll sense
you
there's something
wrong.
You
prefer to let it go
here,
and then strike.
Yeah,
yes,
so
you
can drop your rod. And you can let it go so much, but sometimes I'll even, like on the surface, you know, if you've got a weedless hook, click it over, and then you give them that, and you let them run with it a bit, so they can actually get it. And then as Matt says, you build up and you click it, and
it's a bit like when they're fishing in the Florida Keys for the big swordfish and stuff, right? So they do the same. They've got the belt round them on the back of the boat.
Stand up.
Yeah. And they let the thing go for a while, and then they suddenly strike, like you
said.
Yeah,
well, they're bait fishing off, maybe, but they're normally trolling.
Or dragging,
that's called trolling. Yeah. So there you don't really have a chance to let it go, because as soon as that fish hits, it's pretty much hooked. Because the line is, you know, they're going at speed. They've got drag, but it's not on an open spool.
Yeah, they usually
what you
hook
say.
Themselves.
They hook themselves on trolling, but they're not letting it go. That fish is going because it's taking line.
But maybe they also... Do you also want them to take the hook down?
You don't have that chance with trolling. You know, I mean,
trolling, that lure's moving away from, or is moving behind the boat, so it's moving like this constantly. So that fish has to absolutely nail that. Right. But you've got that constant forward propulsion. So as that fish comes in, you're pulling it out. Mm. So any hook that is mounted on top of that, as it clamps down, you've still got the momentum of the boat, and that's just going to hook it.
Yeah, and invariably you're not actually holding the rod at the time. You'll see they'll put the rods in rod holders. They might be holding one, but there'll be three, you know, they have, depending on how they've rigged it, they could have outriggers that, in downriggers, what do they call those pinel things that take it out? Mm. So you can literally...
side planers.
So they see the rod go, and then they grab it. And I mean, the reason the fish is going is because you've got a drag on there so that it doesn't snap the line. You need, it's a bit of a clutch, so a bit of give. Otherwise, you know, when you get that massive fish hit, it'll just snap your rod, your line, or both, you know?
Now, the reason I was it sounded a bit pretentious. I went to HMV in Bath last week, and I got this, they got books there for like £3 each. You get like five books for like 10 or whatever. Anyway, I got this Hemingway book called To Have or Have Not.
Yeah,
it's all about, and you might know, like Hemingway, it's got all these scenes in, of fishing in, around the Keys, and there's amazing scenes in the book about... basically exactly what we're just talking about, trawling and the fight with the fish. And so any fishing people out there,
didn't he write
it's awesome,
the book, the famous book about the guy that
Old Man in the Sea,
Old Man in the Sea,
yeah, that's
it,
yeah.
Hemingway?
I think it was, yeah.
And there's another one called Islands in the Stream.
The guy fought it for like the whole day and then died,
yeah, basically. Or the one I got was To Have and Have Not. Anyway,
okay,
but yeah, so it sounds amazing to be on a boat in the sunshine like that and getting beers brought to you and trawling.
That sounds amazing,
yeah. But
But trolling, I mean, again, there's not a lot of skill in it. The skill is getting the right lure out to the fish and finding the fish, and there, those guys generally, they're relying on the captain of the boat to do that.
Mm.
So all you're doing is guys will pay for that to go and catch tuna or marlin, and basically all you do is you get told, right, that rod's got a fish on it, sit down.
Yeah.
They grab the rod for you, they buckle you in. And then you realize, obviously, there's a bit of skill in that, but they're all over it shouting. And it's not something that really appeals to me. We'd all love to catch a massive marlin, but for me, particularly with pike, I think going back to what I was saying earlier about the carp fishermen, what they do is in the winter, carp fishing dies down a bit and the predator fishing then picks up. So what they'll do is they'll take their very gear that they fish for carp with, they'll use pretty much the same method to fish for pike. Instead of putting a boilie on, they'll swap it for a bit of dead bait, fish.
Okay, yeah.
They'll cast it out there, sit it on their rod. I don't know if you've seen how the carp boys fish. They've got a bite indicator. So it's a little electronic thing that your line goes through. So they'll clip their bail arm over.
Yeah.
They've got what's called a bait runner, or they'll clip their bail arm over so that when the carp takes, it runs through that wheel and it starts beeping. They've actually got remote controls now, so they can go off and have tea with the lads.
Yeah, I've seen that before. You've
and
seen
then start by rating
attached on these things. Yeah.
Almost like a doctor's beeper. You know, oh, that's me. Hang on, and then they go, "Yep, I've got a."
Actually be inside at the bar at the
you
new?
You can be anywhere. Yeah, that's what they do. They stick their rods out.
That's what I need.
And then they go and they sit and have a social because it's boring. You don't just want to sit there waiting for your alarm to go. So they go off and they all chat about their gear and, you know, what have you been doing and what carp did you catch? Or let's see the picture. And then beep, 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 beep. And they go, oh, that's me. And off they run. And
that goes back a bit to what we were talking about earlier about the technology versus
But I mean, that's just the way they do it. And it's fine, you know. And there is skill in not actually in hooking the fish, because the fish hooks itself. There's skill in getting to the right spot, fishing the right baits.
It's about locating.
You know, it's about locating the fish. Yeah. So that's the
Wardcraft.
Skill.
Wardcraft.
That's the skill.
Because the carp will feed on, like, clean gravel bars, but you've got to find that clean gravel bar.
Yeah.
So they'll go out there ahead of time with like a marker float and a weight. And again, talking about the gear, they'll use braid because it's more sensitive. They'll cast that out and they'll just slowly drag that rod back. And as it goes over the gravel, that lead will transmit that vibration up the line, and they can feel that boom, 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 boom of the gravel. And they go, oh,
so
there's a gravel bar out there.
You can feel
and
if it's silt or if it's weed or if it's
they
gravel.
They measure. They let the line out a foot at a time, and when that float pops up, they go, oh, there's a gravel bar there. It's 8 foot deep. And then they'll bring it in. They'll mark the line, and then they'll bring it in, and they'll work out that was, say, 8 wraps or 8 rod lengths. And then they'll mark their line, clip it up, and then they can cast back to that exact spot.
Well, then they'll get their bait rod out, their spot rod, and they'll start feeding that spot. So you basically lay down some ground bait. So that's it's quite a skill, you know, because now you've got
to
make sure you're getting that bait straight back to the very spot you were just at. You do that, you know, you bait it up a bit. You wait, then you've got to now get your next rod with your bait on, same distance, and cast onto that bait.
So that's the skill. But so what happens when they switch to pike? Pike don't fight like a carp. Carp are very compact fish, so they'll get the they'll pick up the bait and they'll just almost swim to the other side of the lake sometimes. Whereas pike are quite long and thin, so on a big rod, they can't really get to turn their head away from you and swim in the opposite. And they don't tend to really. Pike swim back and forth and they jump about. But so when you I think half the fun, or more than half the fun in the pike, is that initial strike.
Yeah,
you know, they because they're long and thin, they strike almost like a snake. You know, they're like ambush predators, so they coil their body and they strike at 100 miles an hour or whatever.
Yeah,
and when they hit that lure, when you see it, I mean, that's even more exciting. But just that feel of that bang. But then after that, they are a bit disappointing, aren't they? Really, you know.
Yeah, you get a couple of good runs out of them.
Yeah, they'll fight, and you know, big fish on light gear, but they don't have the stamina of some other fish. So the carp guys catching these pike, they're missing out on 80% of the fun, really.
Yeah.
They don't see it, they don't feel it. They've got this massive rod, and they reel. So a 10-pound pike is like not that, but you know, catch it on the right gear, in the right circumstances, using the right method, and it's amazing. You know, catch it on a light rod on the surface, you see it come up. It's a real thrill. So it's just balancing your gear and your expectations to the species and the time. And you know, I mean, one of my most fun days I've ever had in this country was mackerel fishing. We used to go
down. They can go like little trains.
I mean, they're tiny fish. They're baby tuna, basically. Mm. They're a species of tuna.
They're great
to
eat as well, obviously.
Yeah, and they're abundant too. So if you find them, you can catch.
You've got to get them right time of year, don't you?
Summer, when they're shoaling, when they're migrating, I think. But you know, we used to go down to Chesil Beach and fish with a carp rod again, with like a 2-ounce weight with feathers.
Yeah.
And that's fun. You know, you go down for the day with the family and you got this massive rod and you cast it out. But invariably you're catching 2, 3, 4 at a time sometimes.
Yeah.
And they're all countering each other. So they swim, so that it feels like you're bringing in a big plastic bag.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wow, look, I caught
four. For once, it's not a bag. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not a thrill. It's, you know, after a while.
Well, I know what you mean, because we did that once in Ireland as well, off the rocks in Kenmare River, basically through. With the silvery line,
two or three or four feathers.
And we pulled up like three in one go.
It's nice, and
we barbecued them, and it was absolutely amazing.
No, and it is again, and there's guys that do that all their life, you know. And it's good, and you can go and catch them. But I wanted to catch him on a spinning rod with one lure and a light rod, and we went out for the day and caught like in my little inflatable kayak. It's the first time I decided I needed a kayak. I was like, I need to get out there to where the fish are. I don't want to have a rod that can cast 100 meters.
And you know what?
That's what got me into kayak fishing.
I think
a little inflatable.
That was exactly why Dave Morris and Ian Harris got into it,
really,
because they saw people that were going out and catching those fish. I'm pretty sure that was why they.
Well, we went the next year. We only went like once a year for about 3 years in a row, I think, to Chesil Beach. We stayed over. And
sorry, where's Chesil Beach?
Chesil's down south near Weymouth.
Okay.
So it's about 2.5 hours, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Lovely Pebble Beach, and there's quite a lot of mackerel there in the summer. And it's just, we used to go with the family and take a rod and catch a few and then barbecue them on the beach.
Nice.
You know, fillet them. And my mate and I, one year, we rocked up with this inflatable boat. Everyone looked at us sideways, like, what are these idiots doing? You know, typical Zimbabweans. Pumped the thing up. Out we went. And I tell you what, we had so much fun. Just 200 meters offshore in this little inflatable, casting little spinners, and we caught 34 fish, 34 mackerel from the boat, and it was...
You chucked them back, or you kept
them? No, we kept them. Yeah, but the thing is, going back to what we're saying, they're small fish.
Yeah.
But I knew what my target was. I knew I wasn't going to catch a 10-pound...
Your target was 34 fish.
No, my target was mackerel, and we caught 34
and achieved it on just light gear.
So that's basically the moral of that story. You know, and if I put a picture up, like my Zimbabwean mates will go, all right, you got the live bait now, you know when are you going to catch the big fish? You know, it's like, no, that was my quarry, that's what I went for, the plan, and I caught, and it worked. We got a boat, and it's an achievement.
That is,
it's definitely not all about just catching the big fish, you know.
And it is, it's either that, that's exciting, but it's also the sight fishing, that's another way.
You
don't have to be big. I've gone down to Weymouth, and I've fished in the harbour there.
How much time do we have? Do you want to keep rocking, or you want
to? No, I meant. Can't you recycle into the bottle?
No, man.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so it's interesting what you were saying about the trout fishing side of things, because I grew up pretty much. My parents decided that they'd get a motor caravan and we'd do all of the west coast of Scotland. And then when we'd done all the west coast of Scotland, then we'd do all the islands. So we did all the Inner Hebrides, then we did all the Outer Hebrides. Yeah. And that was just, there's zero trespass laws in Scotland. So you just rock up beside the lock in the motor caravan. So for me, I didn't have a telly till I was 23. So I was always out in the woods, in the sticks, doing whatever. And fishing was just a massive passion. Yeah. So we'd get there, I'd like be tying flies in the evening, and then I'd be going out, matching the hatch, going out, working out what the trout were feeding on, trying to make something that looked similar. Going out, fishing, catching the trout, releasing them, and did it. And then eventually, once we'd done all that, we went over to Ireland, and I loved going over to Ireland.
I bet,
it was just crazy. Yeah, just so good, the fishing in Ireland.
Yeah, it's something that I would love to do more of. As I say, I kind of do it just because, just for, I don't really, I sort of kind of set my expectations low, and then if I get a bite, I'm happy.
Yeah,
you know? But I would love to do that Outer Hebrides, and I think it's the Kelmac ferries. I don't know if they're running at the moment, but you can go around all the islands and
We used to go up to Scotland, then we used to cross from Oban.
Okay. Yeah.
So cross from Oban across to some of the you know the others, but yeah, that was always. Loved it. I was very fortunate growing up from that point of view that I would always
Get to. Beautiful beaches, beautiful
Like
you were there in the summertime, were you?
We used to go end of June, beginning of July.
So maybe you missed some of the midges, or did you
was the idea was to miss the midges. So it was always, but being on the coast, that helped because you got the wind.
It was
more when we took a hike into what they call the hill locks, which were the less pressured sort of trout fisheries, so you'd have to walk 8-10 miles.
I know my wife and my father-in-law, my late father-in-law used to take my wife to do that, and that's the thing that kids are missing, that's which I would love to do with my, and I've done it a few times, not as much as, that's amazing that you did that till you're 23 and you had so many experience, and you could actually tie the flies, because that's got to be a dying skill, right? Not many people know.
Yeah, I think there's a few coming, but it's not as, but it's quite, and I taught my daughter to do it, because the whole entomology thing comes back to that.
Yeah.
Right, was, and she'd learn, like when we caught the trout, we'd spoon them. So you get like what they call a marrow spoon. So it's like a shallow trough and you push that down the gut of the fish.
To find out what it needs.
You twist it and you pull it out and you pull its stomach content out.
Oh wow.
So you would then see dragonfly larvae or, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, right, we managed to fluke that particular fish, but now we know what that's been feeding on. It's been feeding on buzzers or whatever. So you'd go in your box and you'd get something that looked like that, and then you'd cut it, and then you'd get more fish, and you'd learn what they were feeding on. So that was another...
Obviously, you don't do that with the ones you plan on throwing back.
Yeah.
You probably could, though, couldn't you?
Probably could. I don't think it would be...
Could you? Check the stomach
and probably traumatise them a bit. Yeah. I mean, we have that, don't we? We've got stuff shoved down your...
Animals, fish, them amazingly resilient.
I think people don't realise. Obviously, you don't want to torture them unnecessarily.
No,
but they probably would. Would survive that. Yeah. So, any advance on that?
No. I mean, how much time do you guys have? I mean, just trying to think what else.
We don't,
because we've been going for an hour. We've been going for an hour, and
we don't have to
20 almost now.
Be here all day.
Yeah. Anyway.
You have any specific questions about the fishing world that you're trying to get into?
I mean, obviously, I want to. Let me just think here. Yeah, I mean, I need to look on thelurebox.com, right? Is it thelurebox.co.uk
or lurebox.co.uk? Yes.
Thelurebox.co.uk.
Yes.
So that's where we can find all the equipment, and I'm probably gonna try to. But what would you recommend to someone like myself who's kind of fished when they were a kid?
And fish sporadically. With Matt Boast.
Yep. Okay. Matt Boast gives lessons. Cool.
Free lessons.
I wouldn't mind doing some. Also, at Albury, you can do fly fishing.
Yeah, Albury's really cool. We should go and get a day out there.
That'd be amazing. Cool.
Yeah, Albury's nice. We can go to the Percy Arms. I'd like to drag.
Yeah. That burnt down, didn't it? The Percy Arms, and then they rebuilt it. Was it the Percy Arms?
I did it. Well, not recently. Not since I
was that recently, or
I'm sure they had to rebuild the Percy Arms.
That's lovely. Yeah. So
I'd be well up for Albury. Yeah, we could get down and do some dry fly.
I think I'm still a member.
Check this out. I'm pretty sure I've still got my membership card.
Pull out your membership card.
Oh yeah, I'm a member.
Mine's even in my wallet, to be honest.
I reckon I've probably binned mine off.
No, I haven't got.
I don't keep everything in my wallet because
Games Exchange, yeah. You've got your Games Exchange card.
Got my fishing license.
Yeah, I've got my fishing license, yeah.
There you go.
I've got a brim on
mine. I wish I had that last year when the warden came and asked me for my license. Did you hear about that?
No, what was that?
Oh, really? They came and checked you. Is that the only time you've been checked?
It's the only time I've been checked, the only time I didn't have a license. Actually, I've got two here.
That's last year's, because I just looked at my
I did have one last year.
It depends when you bought it.
So, Matt, did you have anything you wanted to... do you have a website for the lessons that you give?
No, I don't give lessons. He's joshing as you.
He will give lessons, but not formal.
I'm sure both of you could give lessons if you
wanted to. Going back to what you were saying about, like, what would you go for, I would definitely say for you, from the point of view of getting the kids into it and bits and pieces, I would go for fixed spool reel. It's easier for everybody to cast.
Yep.
And I would get a rod.
A little rod like that.
Yeah, something light.
15, I think that's a 15 to... Is it 5 to 15 or 7 to 21?
Okay. You got anything maybe even solid tip? Or do you think that's a bit of a bum steer for somebody who's starting out?
I don't think it really matters, to be honest.
So what was the weight on this?
The sort of Western W3, which is a nice all-round... Rod, that might be 7 to 21.
Okay, so I'll take one of these bad
boys. I'd
possibly go even lighter than that.
Well, for the river and the canal, that'll cover everything you want to do. You can catch pike on that. You can catch perch.
For James, he's
I would say give him one like that.
Yeah.
Because that's kids are quite rough with things, and he can. But I was looking for the 5 to 15 gram, which is probably a better sort of weight for you. The other ones we
got. What's that? Or is it bait caster, Barry? What's this here?
That. Oh, that's a light stick. That's a W4, but that's 3 to 10 grams.
Yeah, I'd be pushing more on something like that.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be really sensitive.
Right,
and you'll
feel it more. Yeah,
you're going to feel more
out of
it.
You don't want to go too light, because then you're quite limited.
Okay.
In what you can and what you can cast. And also, if they're a bit soft, it's really hard to set the hook with pike.
Cool.
But that sort of range, like a 5 to 10, 5 to 15 gram.
Perfect.
Is good, but then a little heavier for your pike. I mean, I use that 7 to 21 for bass as well. It's okay. Great. I mean, this is now saltwater bass, not freshwater bass.
Awesome. Okay, we'll sort that out.
But if you only get one rod, this is why we end up with, I don't know how many rods you got.
Too many.
Loads of rods, because you
this is where you don't want Michelle hearing the podcast.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't even know how many rods I've got, to be honest. But
Barry's biggest fear is that Michelle will sell the kit when he dies for the same amount that he told her he bought it for.
No, I've got it in my will that when no. So if you're only going to get one rod, you want something that's a little bit all round, but not people say, if I'm going to get one rod, will it do this and will it do that and will it do this? And I say, well, you can get away with that, but it's not optimized for that.
Yeah,
it's the same as if you had one bicycle, but you wanted to go on the roads and off road, and
exactly.
Jumping, and you you could maybe get an in-between kind of hybrid bike you could jump with, but it's not perfect for it, and you could ride on the road with, but it's not perfect for it. Start to specialize, and once you become more of a, not an expert, but you want a rod that is absolutely built for whatever you're doing on that day, so that you
That'd
can get maximum enjoyment out of it.
Maybe we should set Ben up with a rod and a reel, and we'll go through why we do it and everything else, and do like a little almost mini YouTube type series where we can bring him in here to the shop, he kit him out, why we're kitting him out with, what we're kitting him out with, and literally just
and what he can expect to do with it, and the
braid and the diameter of the braid, and why we're saying to use that, and we can sort of tailor it.
That would be a fantastic.
You
thank
can definitely
you,
get an all-round setup that will give you the maximum if you've only got one rod.
Sure,
you'll have your limits.
And I want to get my fly fishing setup for Ireland as well. But before we wrap up, so you guys are going to have your own podcast maybe going forward, would you say? Or are you kind
that's,
of thinking about
that's
it?
That's the idea.
We want to
guests in that are interested in that people want to talk about or hear about, and hopefully, we'll from our background in the industry, from sort of your side from the retail side of things and my side from the sort of competition and fishing in Europe should bring a little bit of a mix into it. We can hopefully extract some really good information out of the guests and put some quite loaded questions to
them.
The general people that are going to listen to it, hopefully tune into it, are going to want to hear the answers to.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And so you're going to have a YouTube channel, you're going to have a podcast. Cool.
Yeah, I've got a YouTube channel at the moment. Matt, you've got your YouTube channel?
Yeah, it's just under the handle's just Matt Bost.
Matt Bost. I mean, mine is the Lure Box. I don't do much on it at the moment, but obviously there's always plans to do more, but there's only so much time. YouTube's great, and you know, we'd like to spend more time doing the fun stuff.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, well, fortunately, you know, things are quite busy at the moment. It's a very busy time of year for retail wise.
Yeah.
And fishing, because it's a really good time of year for fishing. So it's trying to squeeze everything in. But that's the plan.
And you're gonna, and obviously this is gonna be used if you wanna, if this is gonna be your first podcast
like to,
as well.
I'd
so
like
awesome.
To use this. We're
both gonna
we're
use
your
it
guest so, today, but yeah. And we're learning as well, so learn from
cool.
you.
Yeah.
So but I mean, you know, we obviously remotely we would like to do, because some of the people won't be, well, a lot of the people won't be able to come into our studios.
Zoom
shop.
Calls, especially with COVID and everything, is quite an easy
yeah.
way in
yeah,
so we'll to record. Set it up.
We'll obviously
yeah.
set that up, and that's you
brilliant.
Know, one
what
thing.
Do, what do the other people sort of need on that? Because
they don't
some,
need anything.
Some
yeah.
stuff that I hear where they've got, oh, so-and-so is joining us from wherever
yeah.
it is. This the audio is not
yeah,
necessarily that great.
The
and you sort of, mm. the people that are doing the interviewing, when you're sitting in the car listening to it, the people doing the interview, and you can hear them really, really
yeah.
clearly. So you hear the question,
yeah.
but then when the answer comes across, you're like, "Oh, I've got to turn it up now." And then
I
when the, when it goes back to the
bad
turning
signal,
it down,
sometimes it's audio,
you, the
bad microphone.
Yeah, it is tough with especially with the Zoom calls and the remote calls. But you really it needs expertise on getting the audio tweaked right, so that when someone in post production, I mean, without boring people too much, but you need to make sure that you use whether it's Premiere Pro is what I use, but you can use
so you
Garage
can balance
Band.
The audio so it's all equal.
Yeah, you, that's
so
what you want to do.
You're not having to
that's
turn it up and down.
Do.
Yeah. According, yeah.
That'll
so
be
you
your
can,
job.
You
I
can
go.
Turn it off. No, that won't be my job. Maybe we can employ Ben.
Yeah.
I think Jen should do it.
Jen's great.
Jen's big into his movie production at the moment, so I'm hoping.
Awesome, Jensen.
But
yeah.
he spends a lot of time doing it, but I don't see many results.
Yeah.
I'm
but
seeing,
it does take
I need
time.
To see, it does
I
take time.
With my YouTube channel, there's a few on there where basically what I was trying to do was I was trying to real-time capture the experience of fishing a competition abroad, so I was trying to do it on Predator Tour.
Oh,
so
gosh. It's
I was,
impossible when you're actually
but it was
fishing
the
a competition.
Editing. It was the editing and having the bandwidth to upload it. And,
yeah,
oh,
exactly.
It's
a lot. Yeah.
Lake, and
no,
you
I mean,
lose
no,
interest in it. And
I've got
just
thousands of hours of GoPro footage and stuff that will never see the light of day because I just don't
yeah.
have the time.
You have
to
employ
edit
somebody.
It.
You
just,
literally, you look at the Bass guys in the States. They employ like a young person coming out of college who's doing videography, cinematography, whatever it's called. But they basically, they come out and they will literally travel with that person and they will film all of their content either from another boat or on the same boat and they'll do it. But I mean, we want to do that a little
well,
bit
didn't
in the
your
competitions.
Mate Steve Collett have one on his boat? He used to go out fishing with a professional photographer.
Stephanie Collett, who's she?
All right.
And, yeah, no,
well,
so,
guys,
I mean, I'd like to learn from you, Ben. I mean, I did those online live chats during COVID.
Yeah, you did a great job. You had
so
Mike Iaconelli.
Mike Iaconelli.
Yeah.
We had a lot of names. We had Luke we, who we've spoken about.
Yeah,
we
that
had,
was awesome. The Insta Live.
We had Klaas Klaassen, the Svartsvanker.
He's mad.
Amazing.
He's
a legend.
Crazy,
I mean, we had
dude.
Some really good people. We had Gary Palmer, obviously. You know,
yeah.
he's another big name there. Yeah, we
awesome.
Had... Yeah.
Well, guys, look out for all that. And, guys, thanks so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks,
guys.
Thanks
really,
for
really, really
thanks,
great.
Matt,
yeah.
for coming.
Really
I mean,
enjoyed that.
It was great. Our first experience of podcasts.
Yeah.
We listened to them, but now we can start making them.
Exactly.
Hopefully, people are interested in what we have to say and our guests.
Yeah, scary thought. Yeah. Especially if beer is going to be involved.
Well, no. Don't want your beer involved. All we'll right. have to do it early in the morning then.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please go ahead and leave me a 5-star rating on iTunes. I have no idea what that does, but apparently it's good. I hope you enjoyed that. Please don't hesitate to hit me up. Email me at ben@systemisrigged.com if you have any comments whatsoever, and I will certainly reply to you. Have a great rest of your day, and I hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks.
Live.